It's now time for the Blown Call Show. All of today's important topics in the world of sports, wrestling, and entertainment, told from a uniquely Canadian perspective. And now, here is your host, Mike the Ref, on the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network.
Hello, folks, and welcome to episode 72 of the Blown Call Show here on the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network. I am Mike the Ref, your host and senior producer here at Edmonton SPN. If you want to get a hold of me, my Twitter account is at Mike the Ref, and the email is theblowncallshow@gmail.com. It is July 28, 2016. On this episode, I will have my thoughts currently on the recent happenings in TNA and WWE, as well as our very special Dummies Guide to Internet Indies, covering What Culture Pro Wrestling episodes 2 and 3, along with some upcoming events. Don't forget, check out the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network t-shirt store at whatamaneuver.net/Edmonton-SPN. 12 colors, great feel. Help support the network, so. There. Now I got all my shilling out of the way here, folks. It's a great Thursday here in Edmonton, Alberta. We've just gone through a few monsoons over the last few days here, but now things are starting to get a little better. In terms of the wrestling biz, wow, what a crazy few weeks we've had here. I know that Andre C. has had his thoughts on Final Deletion here, and I haven't had a chance to give mine. I just want to say, I don't want to give much credence to it, folks. It was a segment more than it was a match. I equated a lot to what happened with the Lucha Underground production. They want to tell more stories than actually having matches at that point. And I think that was more a segment than it was a match. I enjoyed the match itself. For the parts that you're going to call a match, I did enjoy them. Pretty much up until the fireworks spot came out. Once the fireworks started coming out, I was thinking the William Tell Overture needed to come on and start. Once we started hearing that, then I would have pulled a gong out on it, to be honest with you. But for me, when it comes to stuff like this, it's not about what you actually do with the production on this. It's the mere fact that people are talking about this after the fact, and the fact that things are still going strong with the broken Matt Hardy character, with the brother Nero, and even Vanguard 1. A lot of that is still getting over right now in the public media and in wrestling. So, you know what? If you're bringing some extra promotion to yourself and you're moving on the product to the next level, especially a brand like TNA that needs all the help that it can get right now, I say go for it. I'm not going to say I enjoyed it or I didn't enjoy it. It was somewhat in the middle there. I didn't really consider it a full match, so I can't really comment whether I enjoyed the match or not. If it brings you heads to your show and it's successful in that way, and you're not completely run out of the building as a complete joke, then I say have at her. And I don't think this was made a joke. I think this is now turning into one of the smartest moves TNA could have done in a while. So, but feel free to let me know your thoughts on it. You heard all my contact information earlier here. So, but talking about things that are bringing people in, let's get into this whole brand split and the whole world championship situation here and whatnot. First of all, I'm not going to give a full comment on who's winning the draft and how things are completely going here at this point. Because, let's face it, folks, after one night, you can't make a fair comparison as to what's going on. You can absolutely pardon the comment here, but you can blow your load on a first match. And if you got nothing to follow it up with, then it's going to be same old, same old. So I'm going to give it another week here, see what they do on week two, see if they got a nice ground base on what's going to happen here. And I'm going to talk about it on my next Blown Call show coming up next week. Yes, folks, I'm actually going to try and get one in on a weekly basis here. But in terms of the draft, I like the way that they did it. The groups of five, the presentation of it all. I understand why they didn't want to do it as a network special, because you want to get eyes on SmackDown. You want to get those ratings up, because let's face it, that's the reason that they moved this over. This is similar to what happened with ECW back in 2004 or 2006. Sorry, my apologies. They needed to get eyes on the product, so you want to do something that will get them more eyes. This draft did it here. Back in the ECW days, it was putting the title on Rob Van Dam. So everybody had to go to ECW to see the champion. In the end, it didn't work out as well for ECW, but I feel it's for different reasons, which we can get into another time here. But when it comes to the draft itself, I like the way it was done. It brought more viewers in. Of course, the next week when you have the segregated shows, a lot of people are talking about how SmackDown lost the draft or whatnot. Like I said, I don't believe it yet. You got to determine it based on what you do with what you have. You can have the worst roster in the world, but if you produce a higher production value than the other brand, I'm sorry, you're going to get a lot more viewers based on what people want to see. So that's my thoughts on that there. I'll get a little bit more into that next week when I'm talking about my top factors going into the draft and who are most affected by it. So, but our main topic for the show, the Dummy's Guide to the Internet Indies. The first one went over really well with the Evolve 62 show from Ybor City, Florida. And now we're moving on to another promotion, WCPW. So let me take you into our Dummy's Guide for Internet Indies here on the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network. All right, everybody, time for one of the most fun segments that I've come up with in a very long time. Something I'm really starting to enjoy to do. It's the Dummy's Guide to Internet Indies. I'm going to try and come up with some better theme music coming in here in the next few weeks here, but we'll see what happens there. I am your host, the Dummy, for this. Now, the reason I brought this up is I'm a typical guy, grew up in the 80s, and got stuck with the usual WWE, WCW mix here. And let's face it, folks, there is a ton more of different promotions that are available to watch. And I know a lot of people don't have a lot of money and just don't know where to go to find all this stuff. So every month I'm going to pick a different promotion and just go over it. I'm going to try and stay away from the mainstream ones as much as possible. There are going to be some that a lot of people do know about, but a lot of the casual fans don't. So this month, I wanted to cover this very special promotion that just started up merely for the fact of it's sort of a dream position for a lot of us internet wrestling fans. What if you had your own internet YouTube stream, radio show, and decide you wanted to start your own promotion? Well, the folks at whatculture.com actually did that. What Culture Pro Wrestling has started up over the last month here. Based out of England, and I ended up checking out episode 2 and episode 3 of their internet show called Reloaded. I didn't get a chance to watch them live, but they do have them put up on YouTube as segmented shows. And let's dive right into this, because it was actually rather interesting how they set this up. And between episode 2 and episode 3, there was a rather drastic change in their production and how they ran things. So let's get into it here, folks, right off the bat. Starting off with the two hosts, Simon Miller and King Ross. Simon Miller, rather all these guys are personalities on whatculture.com. King Ross, Let's Think, English, Jerry Lawler. These are all younger guys, of course. But and Simon Miller, more of a stronger, very knowledgeable in the business. Apparently, he has gone into training to become a wrestler just to see what it's like and trying to go through that. They had a summary of episode one, and then they announced the special attraction match of the night where El Ligero will be challenging Jay Lethal for a shot at the Ring of Honor World Championship. I'm going to get to that stipulation later on and how much I really do enjoy it. And then from there, we go into the ring with the WCPW General Manager, Adam Pacitti, talking about last week where one of the main bad guys of the promotion, Rampage Brown, ended up pile-driving a security guard and quote-unquote snapping his neck, to which they have decided to ban the pile-driver altogether, which Rampage Brown uses as a finisher move. It's going to be a bit of a detriment to his abilities there, but as you're going to see later on, he's got definitely enough tricks in his arsenal here. But they did announce that in 3 weeks, they have a Rampage Brown and Big Damo going for the WCPW world title, the initial world title match. Big Damo, if you haven't seen him in the ring, he is definitely a treat to watch. So from there, you go in the back, and there was Adam Blompier, who is playing essentially the Bobby Heenan or the Jimmy, more like the Jimmy Hart of the association, bad guy manager, very loudmouthish, and the voice that tries to run the place. His hero is Eric Bischoff, which I heard is going to be joining their promotion for a special night coming up in the next few months here. But other than that, they had an ad for their next TV tapings, which just happened. Well, one's happening yesterday and one's happening today. So then move on to segment two that comes up. Then we go back to commentator chat. And then we get to our first match, finally. This is about 10 minutes in here, folks. We got Drake going against the Primate with manager Susie. Now, Susie is trying to act a little bit like Sherry in a little bit of a way. Not as active, but definitely as mouthy. So a little bit of Vicky Guerrero in there, I would say. Primate was more of a power wrestler, similar to Taz in his different suplexes. I'm not going to say Brock Lesnar, because Lesnar, while he does have a lot of technique, Taz was absolutely phenomenal in his technique of very different suplexes. So this match ended up being sort of a squash match, semi-squash match, with Primate getting the spear for the win. Not much offense out of Drake here. Supposed to be being built up as an underdog, but there really wasn't much to it here. But then from there we go in, and there's a series of promos that come up. Younger Gabriel Kidd interrupted by this Prince Amin, known as like a Hindi elitist sheik type character, attempting to tag up with these two. And then you got another promo after with Drake being interrupted with a James R. Kennedy, who is more of the Bobby Heenan type manager, or actually a little bit more like Slick, a little bit more on style, not as much on forceful action there. And then we go to a Joe Henry promo, who is talking about getting screwed by Big Damo in a qualification, essentially a semifinal for the WCPW title. Gets joined by a fellow named Joseph Connors, and they end up forming a tag team, taking on another faction called the Prospects. I believe it's either a faction or a tag team, headed up by Joseph Kennedy there. And folks, one thing I've noticed so far throughout this show here is there are a lot of promos involved. I understand when you're getting into a promotion initially, you're going to have a lot of these. But it seems when you get promos piled on top of promos, piled on top of promos on a consistent basis throughout a show, it is a little tough sledding when it comes to watching. But you know what? The ring action is definitely worth it with these guys. Coming into our third match here, we have Joe Henry and Joseph Connors taking on Prince Amin and Gabriel Kidd, the two promos that we mentioned earlier here. One thing I've noticed in this is Joe Henry has a very big stage presence on him when he's out there. Very accomplished amateur wrestler. Apparently he is going to be attempting to join the amateur wrestling team for the 2018 Commonwealth Games. This match involved a lot of chain wrestling between a lot of the wrestlers. A fairly even match, even though it looked like Amin was trying to get Kidd to use a lot of dirty tactics, and Kidd was obviously playing the underdog who doesn't want to use any of that stuff. At the end, it was the Righteous Kill DDT by Connors. Essentially, what it looks like is the Rampage that Paige uses in WWE. But there was a blind tag by Joe Henry who snuck in the ring and got the 1-2-3 on the pin. A little bit of dissension between the tag team when it came to the actual pin, but wasn't played up that much. Following the match, there was a post-match scuffle and slap between Amin and Kidd there. Going on from there, following the match, we had a promo with Martin Kirby, who I could see as a real strong bad guy personality, villain personality in that ring, and talking with the general manager, Adam Pacitti, on how he got screwed by El Ligero earlier in the last episode. And he should be the one facing Jay Lethal tonight. And Pacitti just basically said, get lost, go away, blah, blah. And Kirby says, well, I'm going to make sure that my presence is known, and I'm going to ruin this match for you. Way too, never mind. We'll keep going here. Following that, there was a promo by Noam Dar, who, if that name sounds familiar, that is what he is, one of the members of the CWC tournament. He's one of the participants who is going to be going up against one of the Sierra brothers, the Bollywood boys, in next week's edition of the Cruiserweight Classic. So, and he's talking about Rampage Brown and how he's going to be taking him on in the next, in later on in the show here, and how much of a challenge it's going to be to go up against him. So, but following this was the match that drew me in to want to cover this episode here. It is the Ring of Honor World Champion Jay Lethal taking on El Ligero. Now, when I mentioned this earlier, the stipulation on this match is if Ligero wins, he will receive a future title shot. Now, the reason I wanted to bring this up is when you have an indie promotion coming in with a bigger champion such as Jay Lethal in one of the big promotions, if anybody in their wildest dreams thinks that an indie show is going to be having their guy win the title of another promotion outside of theirs, you almost never see that happening. So a stipulation like this saying, okay, if you beat me, you're going to get a title shot in the future, that leaves some doubt in people's minds, and it allows people to wonder, could it happen? Will it happen? Because if, for example, if Ligero does get the victory here, he can move on and they can do a special match with Ring of Honor. I know it would be very existential circumstances of it happening, but at least it'll allow you to have that doubt in your mind. You don't have it set that, okay, you know what? He's going to win, but the champion's going to win regardless here, but it's just going to be a good show. It's one thing I really enjoyed about that. So getting on to this match, there was a real big fight feel to this. You had Lethal coming in. One of the big spots of the night, you had Jay Lethal try and go for his lethal injection. That got missed as Liguero went into the ropes, tried to springboard through to go in for a tornado DDT. My goodness, that whole sequence where both guys missed their big moves there, it still looked really classy. You had a power segment through this match where both guys are establishing that they can do their power moves. Then you got your little kick party for everybody who got kicks, spin kicks, heel kicks, leg lariats, a lot of great back and forth between both these guys, and they worked very smoothly together. One of the moves that I was really impressed with was a springboard RKO face crusher, IRA slam, whatever way you want to call it here, from El Liguero onto Lethal. I thought that was going to be it to finish off the match. But lo and behold, based on the previous promo here, Martin Kirby comes out and interferes, causing this a no contest. Great match, dirty finish. It's one of the two ways I expected this. If it was a typical match, this would be a typical way I'd expect it to finish. So, but after the match, after they dispose of Kirby, both gentlemen dispose of Kirby, Lethal promises Liguero a future title shot as long as he's champion. So I'd love to see that match again. Folks, if you're going to tune into this episode, this is definitely the match to watch more than anything. But from there, we go to the main event of this show, which is Noam Dar, once again, is a member of the Cruiserweight Classic, taking on Rampage Brown, who is being touted as the top villain in the company here, with Adam Blompied as the manager. Now, this ended up being a very slow-paced match. You could see that Rampage, while he has had experience working out at NXT, in TNA, he part of British Boot Camp, a lot of accolades with him, and you can tell he's a very polished wrestler, but this turned out to be one of your standard big men versus small men matchups. In the end, Rampage Brown was just way too powerful, and they did tease a spot where Blompied made a motion for Rampage to execute a pile driver, which would have got him fired from the company. Rampage basically said no, set him up for a Batista-type powerbomb where he had the sit-down style for the eventual 1-2-3 in the win. Following the match, there was a little bit of dissension there with Blompied giving Rampage a little grief for not following his orders. But immediately out of that, you hear Big Damo's music coming out, and Big Damo comes in the ring, and these two guys just start wailing on each other as they fall to black, or fade to black, more like. And that's your end of episode 2. Overall, on this episode, not a lot to write home about other than that Lethal Liguero match. This is one of those shows where you're trying to get the pieces put together for a future show. And I'm assuming that they have a bigger show coming up. Like, I don't know if they're going to run pay-per-views, but a more higher-level show similar to what TNA does with their old pay-per-views. They call them signature shows, I do believe, now. So the only concern I had over this show was the amount of promos that were involved in it. And apparently, I was reading some internet feedback, because they do review their own show, which is rather funny. And they received a lot of comments about way too many promos. And the show ended up being about 1 hour and 38 minutes from start to finish. And I think the actual in-ring action might have been around 45 minutes, which is pretty much WWE to the extreme. I know a lot of people like it these days, like wrestling. I didn't mind it as much. It's just the promos, when they're layered on top of each other like that with different matchups going through it, it gets a little cluttered. But after hearing the feedback from people, I checked out episode 3 and it completely altered itself. Now, episode 3 ended up being approximately 65 minutes. And I would say a good 50 of it was wrestling action. So they went from one extreme to the other. Let's get right into it here right now. Episode 3, King Ross is out there solo because you had Simon Miller actually looking at getting into his wrestling career. That's the story that they were using. If it leads you to going into the What Culture YouTube channel and start to check out some of the videos on his training, which apparently they have, good on him for trying to cross-promote a little bit here. Nothing specific was mentioned, though, so the casual viewer who's just popping up this video isn't going to know to check the channel for something like that. So, but from there, King Ross is running solo, lets everybody know. Then they head out to the ring, and Joe Henry gets out there with his tag team partner, Joseph Connors. Henry's in ring gear. Connors is in regular clothes. Calls out Rampage Brown and basically questions his manhood about how he can be just awarded a title shot while Joe Henry and Big Damo had to fight to get the other title shot. Let me get you some background here, folks, just to quickly get you up to speed. Blompier is part of a faction called BX. Adam Blompier is the head of this. Yes, folks, it's a complete ripoff, just like the other one. The other one is being head up by Jack the Jobber, another personality on What Culture, and it's called Pachiti Club. Yes, folks, another ripoff. Based on the general manager, too, which is rather interesting. So, each side had to pick a fighter. Blompier picked Rampage Brown right off the bat. Jack the Jobber had the qualification match between Joe Henry and Big Damo because he couldn't figure out. It ended up being one of those screwy finishes with Big Damo coming in and winning thanks to a fast count by Jack the Jobber. Henry, of course, getting screwed there, moves up here and demands that Rampage put his spot on the line. Blompier agrees to it. But then the one thing I really enjoyed is the fact that Blompier's opening his mouth like a wise ass here, and Henry turns around and just starts pulling out your typical wrestling mark insults, making all these statements about everything without it actually being in the ring. It's fair enough, and it's probably one thing that a lot of people don't want to touch in the wrestling business, so I'm glad they actually brought it up. But following that, Blompier joins King Ross for commentary. This, of course, is done post-production here. I'm going to get into the production end of it at the end here. But we have our first match of the night, which is Primate, once again with Susie, going up against the Iron Man Joe Coffey. Now, both these guys look very, very similar. Very big guys, beards, real rough and gruff guys. Essentially, Joe Coffey is a former rugby player. While if you guys are looking on the local indie scene here, Primate, if you're trying to get a look of what he looks like, think of Vince Austin's face combined with Bryce the Slammer Silva's body. Rather developed body. But that face, oh my goodness, ugh. So this ended up being your typical brawling match. This match went to the outside, almost ended up being a countout. The final part of the match was where Primate grabbed a wrench from Susie, who had it hidden in her jacket, and hits Coffey with it, causing the obvious disqualification, and then brings in a chair to go through Joe Coffey's throat, so... This little dust-up is far from over here, so basically just carrying on the feud at this point. But then going on from there, there's like a quick 10 or 15 seconds little promo there, and then we go right to our next match, where we have Big Damo taking on Drake. Big Damo, oh my goodness. Like, you guys have seen him on Impact Wrestling, if you've, for those that have watched Impact Wrestling, this guy is an absolute beast. He has some of the most phenomenal skills that I have seen out of a big man in a very long time. And I'm talking super heavyweight, not just heavyweight. Very similar in look to Albert, early days. I'd say A-Train days would be the best way to explain it. Except with a lot bigger beard. And he looks like a Viking. That's the best way to put it. He looks like what you would imagine a Viking being if he was wearing tights in a ring. And of course, he's joined by Jack the Jobber, who ended up being nothing much more than a glorified cheerleader, more of a Harvey Wimpleman type. More like a kimchi, but I'll let that go right now. They come out and they're talking a promo here about getting ready for the next, for the big title match coming up in a few weeks. And all of a sudden, Drake comes out and challenges Damo to a match, even though everybody knew it was already coming. I can understand a little bit of this miscontent. You want to get the people in the crowd more focused on what's going on here, because a lot of people don't know in the crowd exactly what's going on with the card. So that's more than fine. Amazing agility by Damo throughout this match. He is one of the most solid wrestlers, not only power-wise, but agility. One of the most devastating moves that he pulled off there was one of the sort of a Bray Wyatt crossbody, if you guys have seen him pull those off. Basically, instead of jumping up, it's basically running, like if you're going to run up a wall sideways as you're going for a crossbody, it's straight into the chest. There's no jumping into it. And it looks absolutely vicious when you do it that way. So, but immediately following that crossbody there, Damo goes with the All-Star Plantation, known throughout New Japan Pro Wrestling and RCW as the One-Winged Angel. Perfected by Kenny Omega and utilized by Scott Justice. So ends up getting the 1-2-3. So ends up being pretty much straightforward. Get a 1-2-3 match. Drake's still looking like a bit of a jobber here at this point. But then from there we go to a promo with the Ring of Honor World Champion Jay Lethal, who is putting over their next big show called Built to Destroy. Now this is the first time I've heard of this, and I'm going to bring this up later on here, folks. He's going to be taking on, I believe it's Noam Dar at this show. So I have my thoughts on that, and I'll talk about those later on here. But then right from there, they go right to the next match once again. The team of the prospects of Lucas Archer and Alex Gracie with the James R. Kennedy, the manager that I mentioned earlier in an earlier promo from last show, taking on a couple locals known as Mitchell Myers and Ryan Mercer. Now, one thing I thought of here is when I looked at James R. Kennedy, best way to explain what he looks like is he's got one of these Glenn Gilberti type suits from the early times of TNA. And if you're looking for a facial body type, hair type, think of Road Warrior Animal. If he don't get me wrong before I say this, Road Warrior Animal, when he was up for PWA Night of Champions in Calgary, looked in absolutely phenomenal shape. He was ripped. He was gripped. He looked like he could still go in the ring. This guy here looked like if Animal decided to replace his gym routine with going to a Tim Hortons and buying a dozen donuts an hour routine. Like, ugh. He looked very fancy in the suit, but he definitely did not have the physique. And that mohawk, I swear, it looked just like Road Warrior Animal's there. So this match was a pretty straightforward match. the team of the prospects here ended up being in control throughout most of the match. I'd say 95% of it. This essentially was how you create a jobber match for tag teams. The finish was a very, very interesting finish. If you guys remember Dean Ambrose's old Dirty Deeds finisher with the the inverted DDT, where instead of facing the opponent, you're facing away from the opponent when you're doing the headlock. Drove his head down that way as your partner's coming across and doing an armbar takedown straight on the chest. It looks like you're completely falling forward and driving your head unprotected into the mat for the 1-2-3 finish. Pretty basic, pretty straightforward, and good on the prospects. It looks like they're going to be built up to be a very strong team here. So from there, we go to a quick recap in the next segment here with Pachetti and, with Blonde Pete and King Ross talking about their favorite parts of the show so far. Talking about Primate and Joe Coffey being a very strong match, as well as Big Damo running over Drake. Blonde Pete talking about this is the last time they're going to be at that. And then they go on to the next match here, which is Martin Kirby versus El Ligero. Now, Kirby comes in and he says he wants to introduce his opponent. He announces El Ligero, but he announces him at 270 pounds. And folks, he was a high flyer working with Jay Lethal. This obviously wasn't him. They brought out the fake El Ligero, who's overweight. Classic 90s wrestling, where you bring out a guy with a fake outfit. Similar to the mini Booker T's and whatnot, based on some earlier stuff done in WWE. So this match actually goes on. Go figure it out. I don't know. It's what happens when you have masked wrestlers. You can actually try and pull this match off. It's your typical Kirby's running over the guy, pulls him up off numerous pins, and you know it's a bit of a comedy match when he's got the mic while he's doing the whole thing. But out of nowhere, the real El Ligero ends up coming in through the ring, throws the fake one out, and after Kirby picks him up, throws him over into a jackknife cover for the 1-2-3, and once again, Martin Kirby loses to El Ligero. So I like how the finish worked out there, because normally you just have Ligero coming out at the end here and just beating the living crap, but he doesn't have much to say. He just wants to beat him in the ring, and you want to carry out this storyline, I guess. Following this was, I don't want to call it a full promo, but it was Martin Kirby coming to the back and talking with Adam Pacitti about what just happened. All he did was, didn't you see what happened? And they're like, yeah, we saw what happened. You got beat. All right, well, there was no point to it. They just fade to black at that point, which I thought was actually it was pointless to have that on there, to be frank. But let's go on to the next segment. And it's the last segment of the show here, folks. Joe Henry taking on Rampage for that number one contender spot at the big show Built to Destroy for the WCPW Heavyweight Championship. Now, I did mention earlier that Joe Henry is working on joining the amateur wrestling team for Scotland for the Commonwealth 2018 Games. Wouldn't be for Rio, because wrestling was taken out for Rio, of course, as we have heard numerous times. Hopefully we'll be back in 2020, but that's another story itself. And then Rampage, with all his accolades and his previous experience that I mentioned earlier. Both these guys looked very smooth in the ring. Rampage reminds me a lot of what Bad News Brown looked like in the old Stampede days. Had a lot of technical knowledge, but didn't really use it a lot. It was more your fists, your punches, your kicks. You're looking to beat him down. So at one point, it ends up with Henry getting the quick advantage and setting up and finishing off Rampage with his Freak of Nature Fallaway Slam a la Razor Ramon, Scott Hall. Normally that will finish him off, but Rampage kicks out at two, tries to go off the ropes for a follow-up maneuver, and Blancpain grabs the picks the ankle there. That momentary distraction allows Rampage to pick up Hendry, set him up for a Samoan drop slam for the 1-2-3 victory. Rampage keeps his spot going into the big title match, and from there we just simply fade to black, and they go into a promo talking about the next big show they have, which is Built to Destroy, which was on July 25th, and that ends the show. All right, let me get into my quick summary here. Overall, the action in the ring for a new promotion is what you expect. You're going to get some good, you're going to get some bad, you're going to get some mixture. I really did like the Hendry Rampage match to end this episode. I also like the El Ligero Jay Lethal episode. All the other matches were somewhat serviceable. In terms of a facility and a building, they're using a soundstage at a warehouse. The crowd, I don't really want to judge the crowd a little bit too much on this one, because this is their first episode. Of course, you're going to get a small venue with a small crowd, because you're looking at about 75 people, I would say, in there. They had about four or five rows of seats on hard camera side and opposite side, and then it was just standing room only for two or three deep. The one thing I will say is they did a very good job on their production graphics, like the entrance videos and the lights, the surrounding. Gave you a feeling that this was a real professional setup. You had professional barricades, all that. And the wrestling will develop, of course. One thing I find is they're going to need to find that happy medium between what they do in post-production, in between segments, and what they do in the ring. I found during episode 3, there was a lot of in-ring promo, not a lot of outer ring promo, and some of the stuff that was done out of the ring didn't line up that well. It, like that Martin Kirby interview at the end. Did you see what happened? Yes, you got beat, and that's it. Like, one thing that, from my research and what I've been watching on previous shows, is one tip that Dusty Rhodes always gave out when it came to doing a promo is, where's the money? There was no comment, no follow-up as to, okay, well, what the hell are we going to do about this? And that's something I really think they need to focus on here, is what they're going to be promoting and moving themselves towards to. And that's going to get to my last point here. This show aired on July 11th, and this is the first time I've heard anything about their Built to Destroy show coming up on the 25th. 2 weeks notice. Okay, you know what? You're new. You're starting. Okay. But if you're gonna promote your title match on your very first episode, which was theoretically 2 weeks earlier, you need to start talking about your big show when the title's going to be defended. Not only will that help you get seats, since this is a YouTube-based promotion, it will help you provide yourself with more viewers, and it generally gives your product a better name when you can produce a bigger production. Like, I give TNA credit for the fact that they're actually trying to do the Bound for Glory, a Lockdown, and all these shows, even if they're on TV, giving them a bit more of a big fight feel to them. It's more what the WWE is doing with their NXT program, with the TakeOver specials. Essentially, outside of your WrestleMania one, your Brooklyn one, and usually two others, whether it be Japan or Europe or what have you, all their other TakeOvers are done exactly at the same facility, and it's just a matter of fact that you're hyping them up to be those big shows. And if these guys can work on focusing and getting those facts out to everybody to get those, I'm sure they will once they get everything moving and get everything treading here. But as tradition here on this show, and I know tradition is one episode in, I'm not going to rank the show, but I will tell you who will enjoy it and who won't enjoy it. The type of people that will enjoy this show will be a lot of people that used to watch Wrestling Superstars back in the 90s and the 80s. You got a lot of in-between segments. You got a lot of promo work and a lot of matchups that are building towards the bigger shows. The What Culture Pro Wrestling Loaded show is tailored to get a lot of these matches in, but also to get the personalities of What Culture involved in the promotion. So with a little fine tuning, I think they're going to streamline it to the point where they are going to be able to promote their bigger shows. And the Loaded shows are exactly that, something to load yourself up into a bigger show like that. The people that aren't going to enjoy watching this, of course, you're looking at the over-the-top violence. While there is a lot of catch-as-catch-can wrestling in here, it's not right now to the level where, like if you're watching the Cruiserweight Classic, you're not going to see that here. This is where you're having wrestlers who, there are some established wrestlers here, but there are some developing ones as well. And you're going to have to take the good with the developing. So if you're willing to watch, basically bring yourself back to the 90s and the 80s and see a whole bunch of different stuff with that, then you'll definitely enjoy this. But that's going to wrap up this segment of the Dummy's Guide to Internet Indies. Please make sure you send me in your thoughts to the blowncallshow@gmail.com. My Twitter handle is @MikeTheRef. And I did mention that my August review is going to be last week's Ignite Wrestling show from Fort Pierce, Florida. Mr. 450 taking on one of the members of the Cruiserweight Classic, Lince Dorado, in the main event. As soon as that show gets up, I am going to check it out. It is $1 for that show, but I guess that's the other thing I should mention about the What Culture Pro Wrestling show here. It is a free show, and it is out there for people's enjoyment. They do stream it live as it's happening. I believe it's usually a Monday afternoon based on Mountain Standard Time. The segmented show that I'm watching, and that will be in the show notes, is post-production. So, folks, if you're looking for me to cover something for Dummy's Guide to Internet Indies, please send me an email, send me a tweet, and yeah, I'll see what I can do about talking about it. The only rules I have are they're not allowed to have a national TV deal, and basically, I don't want something that's overly well known, which such as ROH, such as New Japan, people know about those. So let's get into something that's a little different. So, but coming up next is the upcoming events. All right, folks, time for the upcoming events here. And first part of August, there isn't a whole lot to talk about here. A little bit locally, and I got one special event I want to talk about down the U.S., something that recently has come up that I want to make a part of my bucket list here in the next few years. Coming up on August 6th, we have two events in Alberta going on. First of all, we have the CWC, the Canadian Wrestling Coalition. They're going to be having their Primal Instinct show coming up from the Abbey Center in Black Falls, Alberta. It is going to include a over-the-top battle royal for the number one contendership. I know I haven't mentioned these guys a lot. I know that we're looking at sending some people out to check out some of these shows with them, and I've heard a lot of good things about them, so I want you guys to check them out as well if you're in southern Alberta, down at the Abbey Center. And let us know what you think here. I believe Doors open at 5:45. Tickets are only $20 at the door, $15 in advance. It's going to be a heck of a show, and I do know that some PWA and RCW talent will be working there with Scott Justice, I do believe, as well as Frenetico. I know Mecha Richard Blaze has been there in the past. Sounds like it could be a very interesting show. But then, of course, Edmonton SPN is proud to present as well on the same night in Edmonton the Tag Team Warfare Tournament from the Albert Avenue Hall, the Albert Avenue Arena in downtown Edmonton. This features 8 of the strongest tag teams in Alberta taking on a single elimination tournament to determine the new tag team champions. Well, I can't really say new, but the Weapons of Mass Seduction here, and this is going to be a breaking announcement, they have been required due to some earlier interference to compete in the tournament. Normally, what would happen at this tournament is the MPW head office allows the tag team champions to get a bye until the final, which is contested under tables, ladders, and chairs rules. So a team would essentially have to go through 3 other teams followed by this TLC match to become brand new tag team champions. That's not going to happen this time around, as the defending champions are being forced to enter into the tournament due to their constant shenanigans around the ring. I can't wait to see it. I'm just getting an email in the last hour here. I haven't been able to look it up yet, but the draw has been released to me to present to all of you as who's going to be facing who in the initial rounds of the tournament. So please stay tuned to the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network YouTube page, as I will be doing a full video up describing each of the matchups. So it's going to be a lot of fun, folks. And I do believe it will be coming out next Wednesday. So, and then the other thing I wanted to talk about is coming up August. I believe it is the somewhere in the range of the 4th to the 8th. It's coming up next weekend. And it's something I really want to put as part of my bucket list. And I don't know if anybody else has heard of this. I'm sure people in the eastern states have. It's the NWA Legends Fest. Now, this event takes place in Charlotte, North Carolina, home of the Queen City and Rick and Charlotte Flair. So it seems like it'd always be a good time there. A lot of the legends from the NWA are going to be there. And it's a big meet and greet. I think it's a little more fan interactive than something like a California or a Cauliflower Alley Club would be. It's going to have a lot of great shows coming up on there. And the one reason I'd like to get down there this year is I've just found out that Tessa Blanchard and Rachel Ellering are going to be going at it for the 3rd time there at that show. So after the first 2 matches these two have had, I really wonder what they're going to do to top themselves. It's going to be tough, and I hope there's some video available for it. If there is, I'm going to let you guys know here in the future. So there's going to be a lot of other great stars and a lot of great other cards there. And if I get any links to any other shows that are coming up down in that area, I'm definitely going to retweet them on at Mike the Ref. I'll see if Edmonton Sports Podcast Network can retweet them as well. So, but speaking of the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network, it's twofold coming up. We're going to be having another Blown Call show, which will be coming up next week. And I'm going to be discussing, I'm looking, it's either going to be the top 10 people that are going to take advantage of the brand split, and 10 people that need to worry about the brand split. Or I'm going to look at 20 factors that are big when it comes to dealing with the brand split here and everything WWE. I didn't want to talk about it after the first week, of course, because of it being so new, and you don't really know what's going to happen until you let things settle down a little bit. As well, in the last couple days, I just received all the files for this month in the PWA Night of Champions edition. I'm either going to have that out either next week or the following week leading up to the Summer Heat show presented by PWA in Calgary on the 13th Tickets are available there as well, folks. So don't forget to check out the Century Casino if you're in Calgary on Saturday the 13th of August. And of course, our next Quick Calls episode is going to be coming from the Alberta Avenue Arena with the Monster Pro Wrestling Tag Team Warfare Show. I'm sure myself, Andre C. are going to be there. There is going to be no Edmonton SPN Presents YouTube coverage on it. This is a straight-to-DVD release. I'm looking at some channels to possibly set this up as a pay-per-view. But that's something I'm going to have to work on here. And I want to make sure that there's enough quality there in terms of our production value to make sure it's worthwhile for you guys to spend your hard-earned money on. So either way, it will be available on DVD for you guys in the next month if you're looking for it. And if you're looking for any other DVDs from the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network covering RCW and MPW, please feel free to get a hold of me and we can go over the catalog and see what you're interested in. And speaking of looking over things that you might be interested in, don't forget to check out the Edmonton SPN t-shirt store at What a Maneuver. Not only that, check out their Twitter account at WA Maneuver. The guy that runs that account is absolutely a freaking genius when it comes to a lot of his tweets that he sends out. But check out www.whatamaneuver.net/Edmonton-SPN and you can pick up one of our Front Row Mafia shirts. They're as low as $22.99 a shirt, folks, and they're available in 12 colors. The feel of them is absolutely incredible. It's a softer fabric. It feels very comfortable wearing, and with the proceeds going towards the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network, so we can provide some higher quality production values for you. Maybe even pick up a second or third camera here, and maybe we'll have some of these higher-end pay-per-views that people have been looking for from us. So, but just to wrap it up here, folks, don't forget, if you want to contact me, my email is theblowncallshow@gmail.com. And my Twitter account is at MikeTheRef. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/EdmontonSPN. But with that, please be nice to your referees because they definitely have a tough job to do. But they do come up with a blown call every once in a while. And this has been the Blown Call Show on the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network.
This has been the Blown Call Show with your host, Mike the Ref, on the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network. For more information on all the network programming, search Edmonton Sports Podcast Network on iTunes, YouTube, and Facebook, or check out their website at edmontonspn.podbean.com.